Hello, everybody. This is Dolores Cannon again with the Metaphysical Hour. And I want to apologize for last week. It was supposed to be a live show. I was at the UFO conference in Eureka Springs. And there was a mix-up because we have two lines coming in, and they called the wrong number. And that was why I was sitting there with my guest, and I didn't have, we weren't hooked up. These things happen sometimes. You know, there's always these mechanical things, especially when you're in a different location. But tonight, we've got the numbers straightened out now, and I don't think they'll do that again, let's hope, anyway. But anyway, the UFO conference, this was the 21st year, and I have been with them since the very beginning, helping with it all the way through. And every year I try to interview somebody there. And we have a lot of the same people that come back all the time to speak. And they've been on my show many times. But there was a rumor going around this time that maybe Lou Farish was going to finally give up doing the conference. And I hate to think that because this has been his lifeblood all these years. But I asked him about it, and he said, well, it's possible. But that doesn't mean the conference will die. It won't stop. It just means that someone else is going to take it over. So it will continue. But, you know, every time you get someone else taking over, it may change. Let's hope it doesn't, because it's a very good conference. We had about 400 people there. But my guest tonight was one of the speakers, and we were sitting there waiting for the call, and it didn't come. That's why they put a show on from the archives. But I've arranged to have him on tonight, and he's in Colorado, so we're doing it by the phone. So my guest is Dr. Claude Swanson. Hi, Claude. You there?
Hi, Dolores. Yes, glad to be here.
Uh-huh. Yeah, now we're all hooked up. But I said, with the electronic things, you never know what's going to happen.
Yep.
We haven't quite got to telepathic communication anyway. Okay, but Dr. Swanson, I keep running into him everywhere. I know I've known him for several years, but every time I go to a conference, he always seems to be there. And that's the way it's been in the last several months, hasn't it?
It is, yeah. Yeah, I told the story at a couple of conferences ago about how I met you, because when I first started trying to write my book, Synchronized Universe, I was blocked, and I just sat looking at the computer, and my hands weren't moving at all, and day after day I felt, well, this is some kind of blockage. Maybe it's some kind of past life experience. I don't know. And I arranged to come down and have a session with you. And I already knew your books, but anyway, our session did help, and it got me unblocked. So, you know, we've been...
Yeah, I remember the information that came through. I don't remember exactly. I just knew that I didn't understand any of it. So I figured it was something that you needed, and that was the important part.
Exactly, yeah.
But Dr. Swanson is a physicist, and you were educated at MIT and Princeton.
Right.
So you really started out to be a scientist, didn't you?
I did, and I was very serious about trying to figure out how the universe worked, and I have a lot of curiosity about how it works. What was surprising to me was that when I had got the best education I could get, I still felt unsatisfied. Like, you know, is that all there is? It seemed kind of superficial, and it felt like... you know, something major was missing from the whole thing. I was trying to work on my own theory.
Well, you know, a lot of scientists, that's as far as they go, because they say that's all there is.
Yeah. A lot of people just accept what they're taught and kind of figure, well, that must be the way it works. But I just knew something major was missing, and then I came across remote viewing, and all of a sudden everything that I had learned in school was obsolete. So
there's a whole other thing out there. But let me tell the name of Dr. Swanson's book, because I'm going to call you Claude anyway.
Please do.
Claude's book, because we're going to be referring to it. His book is called The Synchronized Universe. That's funny. Mine is The Convoluted Universe. Yours is The Synchronized Universe.
Yeah, and they actually, there is a connection between them, too, because in The Synchronized Universe, which is sort of where I ended up after I did a lot of research, you know, to figure out, because I I tend not to be the intuitive person who just kind of channels all this stuff, but I did all the research with all the reports and the science and interviewed all kinds of scientists in all kinds of areas to figure out what's true. And because you know, the average person grows up in our society being led to believe all these things are hoaxes or they're based on misinformation or things like that, and so you don't quite know what to believe. And I found out after very careful research that a lot of these strange things are absolutely true, and our science today kind of overlooks them, kind of ignores these things, like remote viewing or past life regressions, all these different things. And our universe is much more interesting than our science understands.
It falls into that gray area that they'd rather ignore.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't fit into what they've been taught and what we've been led to believe.
Yeah, if they start taking a serious look at these phenomena, they'll have to change physics from the ground up. And that's what I realized. And so in my book, the first 12 chapters are best evidence for a lot of different phenomena, trying to find out what, you know, how real are things like near-death experiences, ESP, remote viewing, things like that, and get the best evidence. And then the last chapter, trying to say, well, how could we fix our physics to begin to account for these things? And that's where the synchronized universe idea comes from. And it's not that different from yours, I'm finding out, because it does predict parallel universes, and it does predict that consciousness can change things, and we can change the past and things like that. So some of the same effects, you know, seem to come out of my model. So I'm noticing that.
Well, you know, that's it. We are finding, in my work too, there's a lot more parallels in this than there are contradictions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But like you said, you got to fix physics. That's going to be a little difficult.
Well, you know, it's the hardest thing is changing people's minds. You know, when you're set in your ways, for physicists, they kind of, you're educated to believe that your emotions don't affect your experiment. You know, and
will
so,
or won't.
And so no one.
But
no
would you say that it will or it won't?
Well, physicists and most scientists are educated to believe that our emotions do not affect.
Do not. Okay.
Our experiments. So it's going to be a big shift for them to get to a place where they recognize that there is an interaction that goes on. You know, Bill Tiller, as you know, I'm sure, has a laboratory where he builds up a special kind of energy called subtle energy or chi in the lab. And when that happens, our consciousness is coupled much more tightly to objects and things around the lab. So he gets some very strange effects happening, and he'll get different results based on how someone is feeling that day. Some bizarre experiments. So this is the new physics that you know, scientists will have trouble learning how to deal with, I'm afraid.
Because it probably is affecting their experiments, and they don't even know it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But how would there's no other way to do it unless we just completely screened off everything? That'd be very hard to do, wouldn't it? You know, shut off your emotions from what you were working on. You'd have to screen it out some way.
Yeah, I mean, most scientists are not very emotional, and most of the time they're not paying attention to these things. So whatever effects they have, they're probably random. It's probably noise, and they don't catch on that it's important. But there are some situations where emotions and feelings have a big impact, and you know, they'll have to change and begin to deal with this. It'll be a whole new science.
But anything that's subtle like that they can't, you know, prove, that's the hardest part for them to understand.
Right. And of course,
you know, they're used to repeatable experiments, something you can touch and feel and measure.
Yeah, well, this is the amazing thing that has happened in the past 20 years, is we now do have quite a few repeatable experiments. I mean, that's what I talk about in the book. I mean, the Princeton Pear Lab is one of the most famous. They've done, you know, hundreds of thousands of experiments with people trying to communicate through ESP or trying to use their psychic psychokinesis, their mind power, to affect a distant object. And we now have a little device called a random event generator that makes random ones and zeros based on quantum noise. And your mind can affect this thing. And this is what they've been proving, that they'll take a little random event generator, put it thousands of miles away from the person, and ask that person to make more ones than zeros. And they will get
that. I saw that in your book. I was going to ask you what that is.
Right. There are several different ways of making it. They started out, the first one they had was like a vertical pinball machine. It drops metal balls at the top, and it hits nails and bounces, and they pile up at the bottom in little bins and makes a little bell-shaped curve. And they would ask the psychic to try to make the balls land more to the right or more to the left. And
uh-huh,
they were able
to direct
to do it.
The way it falls?
Right, exactly. But nowadays they've got a much simpler, more portable version called a random event generator, or REG, and it's really just sort of the hissing noise you hear on the radio or the hissing noise you hear on an electronic circuit. Turns out that the electrons, when they pass through a resistor, do it kind of randomly, and they make a hissing noise. And you can process that to make random ones and zeros from it. And by our physics, you should not be able to affect that. It's based on quantum theory. But the psychics are able to make more ones than zeros or more zeros than ones.
Uh-huh. Well, I noticed, probably just, you know, going through the book, you were talking about how they used this machine when events were happening.
Right.
You know, if, like you said, like the mind power, the focused mind power of many people.
Yeah, exactly. This is one of the most...
This machine could pick up these things or predict it?
Can you explain what
that was all about?
Yeah, sure. That not only can we use our intention, our mind power, to make more ones than zeros or more zeros than ones with this little device, but they discovered that when many people are focusing on the same event, it also affects these machines and even more strongly. There's now a network around the world of 100 or so of these devices, and they process them by computer, so they compare the results. Now, each one should be random, so what one does should have no effect on what another one does.
Yeah.
But when people are focusing on some big event, 9/11 was one example, where lots of millions of people are looking at the TV set, all thinking the same thoughts, then these little devices start to make their ones and zeros in sync with each other. They'll go high, make a one at the same time, make a zero at the same time. They become coupled together. And that's a very strange thing. Our science can't even begin to explain how that could happen, but we do see that mass consciousness is affecting space and time. And there have been some mass prayer events, synchronized prayer, where people around the world will pray for peace or things like that. And when these happen, they also find that these little REGs start to act like they're coupled together. So our space-time really does respond to our thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's rather like the 100th monkey syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, to me, this is one of the most hopeful things that we're learning about the new physics, is that people, I think we've been raised to feel we don't have any power, we can't make things better. And what our science is really learning, what we're learning about, is our minds have enormous power. And especially,
yes, that's what I lecture on, too.
Yeah, exactly. And if we focus together on something, or if we focus continuously, the more energy we put into it, the more regular we are about it, it builds up. So we
uh-huh.
really can change the future.
Well, see, that's what I was lecturing on. It's been over 20 years ago when I first wrote the Nostradamus book.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because that was one of the main things he wanted me to tell people everywhere I traveled all over the world, was that mm-hmm. you could affect the events, or the future events.
Yeah.
They were not set in stone. They did not have to happen.
Yeah.
And he said, it's the same thing going along with other things too, but he said, you create your own reality.
Mm-hmm.
And everything you have in your life, you have brought there because you have focused on it and drawn it into your life.
Mm-hmm.
But they said, you don't know the power of your own mind, that you, if you don't like what's in your life, you can change it.
Mm-hmm.
But he said, if one man's mind is that powerful, then imagine the mind of many, many people focusing on things. So he said he wanted me to tell people that if we could get groups of people focusing on things, he was mentioning peace and, you know, changing the what he was seeing with the horrible events. But he said if you could get many, many people, groups of people focusing on the same event, the power is tremendous. It was not only multiplied, it was squared. And that was what I was trying to tell people, that they could go back to their groups, metaphysical groups, prayer groups, and focus together on one thing. We could create peace in the world.
Right. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. In fact, it was your Nostradamus books that first put me on to you way back when, because
the 80s,
because Y2K, I remember in the mid-90s, was coming up, and I wanted to learn what was going to happen, and someone said, well, there's this lady who's been speaking directly to Nostradamus. You should talk to her. And that was how I came across you originally.
Well, I remember I was at lectures right before Y2K, and all they were talking about was all these horrible things that were going to happen to the world. The computers were going to crash. Everything was going to be chaos. And they kept saying, what does your prediction say? And I said, it's not going to happen. And I was the only one out there, I guess you would say the only voice of reason, because everybody else, they were going to, you know, stocking up food, they were going, they were getting guns, and they were prepared for the worst, and I told them it's not going to happen. I was on Times Square in New York and being interviewed for HBO a week before, you know, the year 2000 was coming in. And they were saying, what do you think is going to be happening next week whenever we go into the year 2000? And I said, nothing. It's not going to be any different. And I said I didn't want to be on Times Square when it happened. But it's like everybody else were into this mindset of all these terrible things. And I knew it wasn't going to happen.
Well, see, I've
thought of something, Claude.
I'm sorry?
I just thought of something when I said that. See, there was a mass mindset also focusing on something negative. But it didn't happen. That's an interesting concept.
Well, it is. It is. I think, I mean, to me, I've been trying to understand this for 20 years, I guess. From a physics point of view, I came at it more from the point of view of probably our mainstream culture and also from the scientific culture, which kind of says, well, we have these laws and things are supposed to happen a certain way, and so you make predictions and they should come true. And the trouble with that is that, well, where's the free will? Is there free will, you know, if you can make predictions?
There is.
And that's always been the conversation for me, and I guess I began realizing maybe 6 or 7 years ago how much power the mind does have to change the physics, you know, and to change the forces that are at play out there. But still, there are other big events that are underway at the same time. I mean, you have the planets, you have gravity, you have certain forces that kind of continue, but the power of the mind is really enormous, and we're just starting.
And the free will is the main thing, because we were created with that, and it cannot be violated.
Right.
So I always tell people the hardest thing for a psychic to do, any psychic, is to predict a date, an exact time or date when something is going to happen. Because it does depend on circumstances. Anything you do in your life can change it, can change the event.
Well, one of the things that I've been studying the last couple of years has been energy medicine and healing, which is another area where we have a science, you know, a mainstream accepted science for how things work. It may not be true, it may not be true all the time, but it's what people believe. What I spent about 3 weeks down in Brazil, the John of God.
I've had people on the show who have been down there and talked about him.
I spent 3 weeks down there, and what I discovered is that the power of spirit, I mean, you know, it's not something abstract, that I had a so-called invisible operation when I was down there. I mean, nothing happened to my conscious mind, and I went away from the event, thinking nothing much happened. They said, go back and rest. And I thought, well, this nothing happened. I don't really need to rest. The next 22 hours or so, I was flat on my back in bed, unable to move, and I could feel invisible fingers and instruments poking around in my abdomen. And I don't know if they were fixing me or just showing me that they were real, but but it was sufficiently painful that I got the point, I said, okay. And so I've learned from that and things like it that spirits are very real, and when things of that dimension are around, the laws of physics don't mean very much, that they can be trumped by something stronger,
Yeah, because, that's what it means. Man-made laws and physics and things don't really apply when we're going into the spirit part.
Exactly.
But that's what I work with, too, in my work is, it's energy, because I work with healing people, too.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I tell them, too. It is the power of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because in my work, I found that out. You make yourself sick.
Yeah.
And if your mind is that powerful, it's powerful enough to cure you.
Yep, exactly.
I'm working with energy healers and doctors all over the world. So this is becoming very big.
Mm-hmm.
I've had other people on the show who are doctors or involved in this type of work. So I think it's going to break through. It's no longer going to be the underground.
Right.
We're finding out just how powerful our minds really are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have the main website I have is synchronizeduniverse.com, and that's where I have sort of a description of what I do. But I have a second website called globalpeaceprayer.com. There's a link to that from the first one.
Okay.
And I've been trying to, on occasions, organize my own little mass prayer groups of people, to when things seem kind of dicey. And I think lots of groups around the world are trying this at different levels of effort to use, synchronized prayer and mass consciousness to help us, to help us kind of get through this and to keep things as peaceful as we can while we're, working our way to 2012 or whatever it is we're working our way to.
Oh, that was what was in my Nostradamus books, too. He said that, the future is not set in stone. It's many probabilities and possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And that there were nexus points, and I think you called them something else in your book.
I call them crux points in my book, in chapter 12 of my book, but it's the same idea.
Yeah, he said there were nexus points where something had to occur. There was no way around it.
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was set in stone.
Uh-huh.
But after that time branched out, like many branches.
Right.
With all the probabilities and possibilities from the worst to the least circumstance of that event.
Mm-hmm.
And it depended, your future depended on which one of these timelines, these paths that you went on.
Right.
And that's why it is impossible to predict something exactly.
Yeah.
Because, your future can change at any time by any decision that you make.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people say, this didn't happen on this certain day.
Mm-hmm.
Something could have happened to have changed the whole timeline.
Yeah. One of the challenges is that some remote viewers like Joe McMonagle have pretty high accuracy in predicting future events. So there has to be some kind of predictability in terms of future timelines. And yet at the same time, we know there's free will, and there's lots of examples of that. I talk about that, too, in the book. And so you have to have it has to be a mixture of the two. And I think these crux points where you kind of pass through something, and then there's an area where there's several different possibilities with equal chance, and that's where your intention, your prayer, your meditation can have the biggest effect at which one of those routes you end up on, because it's fairly easy to shift right after that point, so you kind of look for making sure you're on the best track.
Well, that's what I always say, the psyche tells you, don't drive tomorrow or don't get on this plane or something. You have free will, and maybe you will decide, I won't take that plane or I won't drive.
Mm-hmm.
But then you'll never know if the prediction would have come true or not.
Right.
And they always say the best prediction is one that doesn't happen.
Well, that's why, I think it's so some people say, well, don't talk about, don't put energy into these negative predictions. But I really think that the negative predictions are to help us to focus on what needs to be changed, what we need to avoid.
How are you going to know if you don't know what the possibility is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
But you know, for years I lectured on that. Now I'm over into the other parts with the convoluted universe series because we're going into all of these complicated metaphysical ideas now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, my new book, they keep saying, it is kind of going to quantum physics, and I know nothing about physics, but it's that there is, it's all combining together now with metaphysics
right.
and quantum physics.
Right. Yeah, the talk I gave in Kansas when we saw each other.
Yeah, we were down there. We were in Council Grove, Kansas. Uh-huh.
Yeah, exactly. And I was really trying to show there that my model, the synchronized universe model, will predict a lot of these effects, that you can, because there are parallel universes, there are parallel systems.
Yeah.
And if our normal physics, in the last chapter I kind of explained this whole model, how things are synchronized, and how if we're just dealing with normal Western conventional physics, then we're kind of living on one sheet, one possible universe.
Yeah.
And the laws, you know, work pretty well. But if consciousness becomes important, if the subtle energy, which is the healing energy, the Reiki, the Qi energy, becomes important, we can shift off of this normal sheet onto a parallel universe, which means we're changing our future, we're selecting a different future, and that's how consciousness can allow us to kind of alter the laws of physics, but in a kind of a clean way where we can actually make a science that can describe it but still have consciousness in there.
Well, see, that's why I write about it, but it doesn't mean I understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it says, yes, every time there is another possibility, that possibility is created on a parallel universe.
Mm-hmm.
And it exists there. And it's your reality according to which one you want to go to.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's the part that gets very complicated.
It does, and there are different points of view about that. There are some people who believe that every little choice, every little possibility creates a whole new universe.
And yeah, that's what I've written about, and that blows your mind, you know.
Right, because if it produces new universes that quickly, then it would become impossible to ever predict the future. So, I mean, to me, what I prefer is the idea that we kind of go in a groove for a while until we get to one of these crux points, and then there's some choices, and then there's another groove, and so it's a mixture of free will and determinism, which to me is how you can explain how a psychic or a remote viewer can be accurate, because if you keep multiplying universes every microsecond, someone like Joe McMonagle wouldn't have a chance of ever guessing the right future, you know?
Yeah.
So.
But that was the hard part. I mean, it's easier for me to explain when I'm giving a lecture that when you make a decision, you put energy into both possibilities. If you make a decision, maybe you want to get a divorce, maybe you want to get married, or you want to get a certain job, you mm-hmm. want to move, you're putting energy into two possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then you decide you're going to do this one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I tell them, what happens to the other possibility? You put energy into that. What happens to the other possibility?
Mm-hmm.
And what I was told is that other possibility becomes a reality.
Mm.
And that another you is acting it out and living that other decision.
Mm-hmm.
And that alone is enough to really confuse people, just to keep it that way.
Yep, it is. Yeah.
And I said, that means if you wanted to get a divorce, another you did not get a divorce, and you're living a whole totally different life that you're not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, that's the simple explanation. I said it could get a lot more complicated than that.
Yeah. So well, do we get the benefit?
As easy as we can explain it without going into all these other, like you said, every time, every little tiny decision happens,
yeah.
you create another universe.
Yeah. Well, if we get the benefits of the lessons from every one of our possible choices, then we would get smart really fast, I would think, you know.
Mm-hmm. But that's what I said. A lot of these things, I try to keep them simple because I'm sitting there watching the audience, and I don't want to go over their heads, but I don't want to talk down to them either.
Yeah.
But if you aren't getting into some of these complicated concepts, their eyes glaze over, and you know you lost them.
Yeah, it's true.
Because some of this is very complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think you're going into the same ideas. You're trying to explain them in a different way, aren't you?
Yeah, I am. And it just seems like we're at that time now where consciousness needs to be integrated into science. And, you know, 80 or 90 years ago when quantum physics was first invented, they had a very simple idea. The problem there was that they were discovering what atoms were. And atoms are these, you know, positive charged things in the middle and then these little lightweight negative things zipping around the outside, like a little solar system, you know.
Yeah.
And they knew that, and they said, well, okay, but by our laws of electricity, these little things zipping around the outside ought to be radiating electromagnetic energy. They ought to be sending out energy at a huge rate, and therefore they should be losing energy. And therefore the whole thing ought to collapse. And they couldn't figure out how an atom could be stable.
Yeah.
And Niels Bohr, who, you know, was a great genius, had a dream one night and woke up the next morning with the answer based on his dream. And they knew that particles have a wavy quality to them, so he guessed that when there's an integer number, a whole number of waves going around in one orbit, those would be the stable orbits, and then it wouldn't radiate energy, and those would be the ones who held up over time. So this idea he put down, and he was able to create quantum mechanics from it, but he never explained why they shouldn't radiate under those conditions. It was just kind of a guess, and that guess is, you know, bothered Einstein. And bothered a lot of people for a long time, and consciousness kind of got mixed in with quantum mechanics in those days too, because they had this idea of looking at making a measurement, making an observation of a little system like this, and they said, well, whenever you make an observation, if you have more than one possibility, it collapses them, and you'll just see one, and that's the one that you get, and all the other ones just disappear. So there was kind of some hokey things built into quantum mechanics in those days, and consciousness just kind of entered in this very simple way that if you look at something, it causes it to change, and that's really all they said about it. And now we're at a time where people have to go back to consciousness and say a whole lot more. They got to figure out, well, what is consciousness? You know, what happens, because if we are part of the system, we're not an outside observer looking at the world, but we're in the world. Then what happens? How do we interact with this whole, you know, the whole physics and the whole system? So I think we're at a point now where scientists have to go back to the drawing boards and figure out how to put consciousness into it. And
yeah, that's going to be very difficult for them.
I don't see very many that really want to.
The same with doctors. They're not willing to realize that the natural healing is the way to go either. You know, so it's all of this is going to take a whole lot of rethinking.
Yeah.
Or their minds, you know, just like our minds are evolving, and it's time. I think that's what's happening right now.
Mm-hmm.
That
yeah.
We are beginning to think different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can sympathize with any scientist or any doctor who thinks he knows how things are, because I remember when I learned about remote viewing was in the mid '80s, and I came across these examples, and I was learning about them in a way that I knew it was real. You know, remote viewing, for those who don't know, is a technology that the military basically developed in the early 70s.
Yeah.
It's a series of steps you go through that help you to focus in on some unknown target. You'll have an envelope with some numbers on it. It'll be in some other room somewhere. You will have no idea what's in that envelope. All you're given is the numbers. But it's a procedure to help your subconscious mind, your psychic mind, make contact with whatever's in that envelope, and you'll kind of go out, you know, to the space and time of that event. And it works remarkably well, even for average people, because it kind of gets around this little chattering conscious mind. You know, it gives that chattering conscious mind something to do. And
yeah.
That, therefore, it gets...
But, you know, in my work, I found that I can do it very simply. It's in my first book.
Uh-huh.
by having the person in trance, I just tell them to go to a certain place.
That works too.
And, you know, and I had to do it with things that were happening at that time in the news.
Yeah.
And a lot of times the person hadn't watched TV that day. They didn't know what was going on.
Uh-huh, yeah.
We did this with Chernobyl. We did it with several other events that were happening when I was first writing my first books.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had them go there and tell me what was occurring.
Yep.
And they could watch it and they could see it.
Exactly. You feel like you're there.
But it's not, I know the new way is with numbers, but I said, why don't you just have them go there?
Uh-huh.
You can do it in your mind.
Well, what the military program wanted to do was have no conscious knowledge of what it was.
Uh-huh, but these people don't either.
Because they're out
of trance. They don't know what I'm going to tell them to do.
Right.
And they're out when they're in trance.
Right, exactly.
So they have no way of knowing what's happening either.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, like with the Chernobyl, for instance, we knew everything that was happening that day, and it was many years later before the Russians ever released all the files on what happened that day.
Uh-huh. That's amazing.
How many were really killed and how bad the damage was. But yet, we saw it on that day.
Right.
So that's why I know these things are possible.
Yep.
That's not really predicting the future. It was just seeing an event at this time.
Right. But the surprising thing with remote viewing is that you can, just as you do too, you know, is you can look at distant targets, things that are far away in time or in space, and it's not any harder, you know. In our science, we don't have a clue how to explain the forces that would make that possible. And I just remember trying to deal with that whole idea that these things just contradict everything I'd learned in school, and I didn't know how to resolve the contradiction, you know, initially. But it's a feeling of having your mind boggled. You know, you just don't know how to process it. And I think a lot of people are kind of in that state when they deal with some of this information. It's a whole new paradigm, and it takes a while to, you know, to figure it out.
Well, that's why it was harder for you.
Yeah.
We're already educated and set in this to all of a sudden question it.
We have such a strong conviction that you know how things are. And it's not just that someone taught me in school. You have the lectures you go to that you teach electromagnetism and particle physics, but then you go into the lab, you know, and you do the experiments.
Yeah.
And in the experiments, you're hands-on. You know, I just proved that the theory was right because I got the same results in the lab. And what I never thought about is that you could, suppose you went to a haunted house, you know, or go to a high paranormal activity area where things aren't obeying the laws of physics, then you'll see something new. But if you do the things that are in the textbook, you'll get the same results. It's just that is not the whole story.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's when I noticed the picture on your cover, and that's the first time I read in there what it was, because I couldn't figure out why did you have this blurry picture on the cover.
Uh-huh, yep.
But you want to tell them what that is?
Sure. Well, this is... I'll back up a little bit, because I had a bunch of friends all interested in similar subjects back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And we were concerned about Y2K. And we were living in the Washington, D.C. area, and we thought we should get someplace out in the country that'll be away from all the craziness in case something happens.
Uh-huh.
So some of these folks went out and looked for a house in West Virginia, and they found a lovely house. But because of the background and the predilection of these people, they found the most haunted house anyone's ever seen. It had five strong entities that lived there. It was on Indian burial ground.
We had
Bigfoot experiences. Every known paranormal event, you know, happened on this property. And the picture on the front of my book was taken one night from somebody standing in the backyard photographing the back porch. There's no one standing on the back porch, but what you see is this vortex that is about the size of a person. The head is just a twisting vortex, and the body is half dark and half light, and the clapboards on the wall behind him are twisted and bent because the light coming through this vortex are bent. So, you know, this should be impossible by our physics, but this vortex is, you know, is being visible because it's changing space and time. So this is just an example.
It rather looks like a person. Was that you?
No, I don't think so.
Well, usually that means there's a caller. Caller, is there a caller on the line?
Yes, there is. Hi, Dolores.
Go ahead, then.
Hi, I just wanted to just say you are incredible. I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt him, but I just, out of all the people that I run across, you just simply seem to amaze me with all the facts and information that you've come across. And, you know, obviously want to commend you and also the guests that you have on the show for all the work that everyone is doing. And my question, I guess, is really, you know, I've been into your material for the last 2 years, just amazed, went through all the convoluted universes, and really am just curious, how is it that we can get this information out? Because, you know, I have friends and people that I want to introduce it to, but it's sort of like you can't really introduce it to them until they're exposed to it or they stop questioning it.
Well, that's why Dr. Swanson's book would be good, because it's based on science. He's a scientist with a scientific mind, and some of these people that are skeptical will accept that more than they would my work. Do you think something like that would be the answer?
Well, to some degree, it seems like, you know, it doesn't matter how much proof you give them. It doesn't matter how much, you know, it's almost like there's this level of unseen energy that isn't visible, but when it's discussed on the air, when it's discussed in the material, the books, and
yeah,
even in Dr. Swanson's book, it becomes alive. It becomes part of who we are, and it's just so difficult to show it to someone and to say, look, this is what it is. This is how it works.
Yeah, but I always say people are where they are. We can't change them. We're not supposed to try to make them change. You know, when they're ready to ask questions, then we have the answers. But eventually, if they'll start thinking, they might accept some of these little crumbs that you drop. That would be about all you can do, I guess, and then just wait and see. They're all at their own level of development, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it. But anyway, is that all you wanted to say?
Oh, that was one. And then the second one was, I mean, I've run across people like Deepak Chopra. I've read several different, Billy Myers. I've read a lot about Billy Myers. I've read a lot about you. And again, yours seems to be the most intriguing and the most, you know, even the Seth books, I've gone through all of those. And I'm just wondering, at what point does all these different energies, different concepts, how do we... eventually, you know, even with Dr. Swanson, how do we unite that? How do we have a meeting of the mind and sort of discuss, you know, I know Billy's all the way in Switzerland, you're here, but, I mean, all the concepts all revolve around the same thing. There's only one of us and there's love. How do you unite that and make that more of a universal approach at understanding who we are?
You know, that's the problem, though. We'll never know it all. And that's why me and Claude, we're still searching. But do you have an answer for him, Claude?
Well, I don't. It is a great question, and it is an important question. One of the answers is that different people can be approached in different ways. Everyone who is open-minded at all will have some area that they're more interested in than others. And so maybe someone has some illness, and medical science can't cure it. So they'll go to an energy healer, and then all of a sudden they'll say, well, how did that work? You know, how did that happen? You know, or it might be some scientist who wants to see some data, and then I have data here to kind of talk to that person. It might be like the Seth material, for example, or the channeled material. I wasn't ready for that 15 years ago. I have a sister who... introduced me to that stuff, and I wasn't ready then. I couldn't deal with it. Now, all of a sudden, I'm finding, oh, this makes perfect sense. So I guess I've learned some, but I think everyone has, so there's lots of different people, I think, working in different parts of the puzzle, and I think that anyone who's really open-minded will probably find, you know, that one area that they can relate to.
Yeah, because none of us have all the answers, and that's like you said. Every time I think I know it all, then they give me something else that sends me off in a different direction, and I realize how little I do know. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Claude, I got an email from somebody who was at my lecture in Laughlin at the UFO conference there, and he said he was a scientist. And he was sitting in the audience listening to it, and he kept saying, oh, you know, this is crazy, it doesn't make any sense, and it was all kooky. But he got the book, the Convoluted Universe books, and he went home, and he said, as he read through them, he said, you know, this could be the basis for a whole new physics.
Yep, absolutely.
And he said, I just have one question for you before I go out there, talk to the other scientists and the other people that I know. Did you make this up? He said, the things in the book, are they fiction? You know, he said, I've got to know for sure before I go out on the limb.
No.
So I get hundreds of emails, but I sat out and answered that right away, and I said, no, I want you to understand. Well, everything I write about is real. It's what I get. There's no way you could make these things.
And speaking from a person that's read the books, it almost feels like you're there with you as you're going through it with your patient, because you feel it, you know, as you discuss it in the book, you know, even after going over the material, every time you reread it, it's almost like it's brand new all over again.
Well, people
it's just
say
amazing.
That they go over the books again and again and keep finding something new.
Yeah. And the last question, and I'll get off the air. You have a show.
We've only got another 5 minutes, and we have enough.
Okay. Thank you
very much for calling.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. But that was an interesting. I never know when someone's going to call in, and I'm always surprised.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things, I know everyone has their own way of looking at things and what they need to be able to
understand.
Yeah, and
we're not supposed to try to change that.
Yeah.
Because that's not right. That's their free will to believe what they want to believe.
Right.
All we can do is present the information and let people make up their own minds.
Exactly. Yeah, and that's free will. That's how we learn.
Yeah, that's what I do. If you try to force anybody to believe anything, they're not going to believe.
Right.
They won't listen to you.
You have to be ready. You have to be prepared.
Yeah, you have to be ready. Yeah. That's why I say everyone is where they're supposed to be.
Yeah.
And when the time is right, maybe they'll start asking questions.
Before the Kansas conference, when I knew I was speaking right after you, I got your Convoluted Universe 3, so I would be fully up to date on your stuff.
Yeah.
And what I found is that the strange effects of consciousness and the ability to shift universes and change timelines was very consistent with the model of consciousness and the synchronized universe that I was developing. And all of a sudden, all of that and all the Seth material made sense to me because I could see it from my own perspective. If I had a theory for it, then I could believe it, you know.
Mm.
So that each people has their own way of looking at things, but that's what happened to me.
So you're seeing it from a scientific angle then?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was the same conclusion.
I was still trying to understand what that man meant when he emailed me. He said this could be a new paradigm for physics. But
well,
I think I wasn't sure just one part of the whole thing, you know.
Well, I think, to me, what physics is missing is consciousness, okay? And the consciousness can change the future, can change reality. Well, since physics is all about predicting the future,
laws of physics?
Yeah, exactly. But it leaves out consciousness. So if you're going to put consciousness in, you're going to have a new theory of physics. And so I think your books give some clues how that might look, how that might have to be different from the current.
But that's why every time I think I've got it, then they'll throw another theory at me, and I'll think, no, I don't. And then I've got to sit down and think about it, and I always say, well, I've got to understand it if I'm going to lecture about it and I'm going to write about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of the material I don't understand. I just put it out there and let other people see what they can get out of it.
Yeah. But certainly the power of the mind comes through loud and clear.
Yeah.
as you
but
do.
With yours, you have taken it and done research and studied it and put it into what the laws of physics as you know them.
Right, right. And I'm finding the same thing.
That's why I think your book would be very important for scientists to look at and maybe combine the two together.
I think so, too. I think anybody who wants to see the evidence, wants to see what proof there is, what scientific evidence there is. My book can be bought on Amazon or my website. There's a link to purchase the book on my website.
That's what I was going to ask you. Can you give that out again? How anybody wants to contact you, how do you want them to do it?
The best way is go to my website, which is Synchronized Universe.
I think you better spell synchronized.
I know. I picked a hard word there. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Synchronized is SynchronizeD. Synchronized. We spell it, that's the American way, with a Z. Now, the English, they have an S there, but we spell it with a Z. SynchronizedUniverse.com. So I'll spell it one more time. SynchronizeD and then universe.com.
Universe.
And there's a link there to buy the book. There's also a contact link to email me.
Okay.
And, I'd be delighted to hear from people. So.
And the other website, though, but that was a different one. But this if they want to buy the book or just email and talk with you.
Well, that synchronizeduniverse.com has a link for communication and to buy the book. And so that's the best way to do it. At the top right-hand corner of that website, there's a link to globalpeaceprayer.com for synchronized prayer. But the first one, the synchronizeduniverse.com, is the main website.
Do you have a phone number, or do you don't want people to call you, or what?
Well, I don't normally give it out because it's a cell phone. I can give it out. What do you think?
But it depends on whether you want people to call you or not. You know?
Yeah, I tell you, if people would just email me first, I prefer that, and we can.
That might be the best thing.
Yeah.
But one thing I forgot to ask you. As a physicist, anyway, when all these have changed your life, what are you doing right now with your life?
Well,
are you a scientist practicing, or what are you doing?
What happened in the mid-90s, I was visiting someone, and I came across Yogananda's book. You know, Yogananda, of course, is a famous Indian yogi who came to America in the 30s.
Yeah.
And I began reading his book, and I'd been in the middle of research on things like reincarnation and past lives and karma. I'd come to the conclusion based upon research, all this stuff is real, but I was looking at it from outside, like a scientist studying a bug, you know?
Yeah.
It was an intellectual process, and all of a sudden it hit me that you're supposed to apply these lessons to your own life. You know? That it's about living, becoming better people, you know, applying these things. And so I've really been focusing on, you know, on integrating that into my life. So I'm writing pretty much full time right now. I'm working on a second book, which focuses on the bridge between the old physics and the new physics. Between
okay, so you don't have to work as a physicist anyway.
I'm not right now. I'm hoping to finish this book before I have to go back to work.
I always think it's hard when your whole mindset is changed to stay with something that you no longer believe in or have confidence in.
Right, and I spent 10 or 15
years. You might say your soul, your spirit is not in the job.
Yeah, I did that for many years, but now my kids are out of college, and I'm just
do what you want to do. You enjoy, okay?
Exactly.
But, you know, Claude, I work a lot with the Sivananda group, the ashrams.
Uh-huh.
I travel to all their ashrams in the world and work with the Swami. So they're very gentle, wonderful people.
They are.
So, okay, well, I think we're coming to the time that he will pull the plug if I stay on too long.
Okay.
But I do want to thank you for being on the show, Claude.
Well, it's been wonderful talking to you, Dolores.
And I wish you a lot of success with your book and with your travels, and I hope people will be contacting you.
Well, thank you so much, and the same to you.
I just want to mention, next week I'm not going to do a show because I'm going to be at the University of New Mexico in Santa Fe, and I'll be teaching my class there, my hypnosis class, this is the first time this university is going to give, they were going to give a college credit, and now I've been told it's a college, 1.5 college credits for taking my 3-day class at the University of New Mexico in Santa Fe next weekend. So this is a big honor for me to be allowed to do this. So I'm changing and I'm moving up too. So it'll be 2 weeks then before I come back on the air. And at that time, I'm going to be talking about our conference we're going to be putting on in Fayetteville, Arkansas, our third transformation conference, and I'll be giving more details about that. One of our main speakers is going to be Gordon Michael Scallion, and he never does anything, and he's agreed to do this conference. It's through the miracle of cyberspace with the computers, but he will be able to interact with the audience and answer questions. This is a big thing, I think. So I'll be talking more about the conference when I come back on in 2 weeks. Thank you, everybody, and good night.